Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is the council meeting for July 28th, 2015. The time right now is about 7:02 p.m. Ms. Smith, can we call the roll, please?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Rasmussen, Camp, Gamble, and Gearing.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis was scheduled to read to do the Pledge of Allegiance. He's not here this evening, so we'll go ahead. And Councilmember Kovac was his excuse. She had said she wasn't going to be here, and the same thing with Councilmember Davis. Councilmember Gamble, will you lead us in the pledge?
Sure. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. With council's permission, I'm going to add one thing to the presentations we'll take after the land sales update. It is a presentation from our Congressman Bill Nunez's office. So if there's no opposition to doing that, we'll go ahead and add that as one of the presentations. So the first presentation we have this evening is presentation land sales update. Ms. Lankford.
Usually, I don't have to go quite that fast. Am I going to mess this up a little
bit? No, you're great.
Okay,
pull it on up.
Jane Lamford, Newmark Redneck Break. I don't know if I know my address. 601 1425 Union, 2200. I'm going to run off. Thank you for the opportunity to come in and kind of give a quick update. It's been a while since I came to address council. And I believe Elizabeth was kind enough to make some copies of the information. And what this just is kind of a quick snapshot of other properties on the market. Some we will be familiar with as having been on the market, and we've discussed them before. There's some new activity you may be aware of, maybe not, but I just find that it helps if I come in and kind of give an update. Now again, this was certainly not all of the properties that might be on the market for sale. We just decided to take a sampling, and I'll just kind of follow along. The Mill Creek development site, and part of the reason is just to kind of let you see where other pieces of property are priced, their locations, and I'll just kind of give you a quick synopsis of what I think the difference is between the city's land parcels, specifically Tract 999 and the North Kelsey parcels, relative to these pieces. So the Mill Creek development site is a smaller piece. This is the, I may have to use somebody else's, or I'll get through it. The Mill Creek development site is the one on the Bopalabert Highway. It's for sale for $685,000. Thank you very much. Appreciate you bailing me out there. That puts it at about $13.32 per square foot of usable. The difference there is that only a certain portion of it is usable when you take the wetlands into consideration. The next one, and that's, as you'll know, that's by the Lowe's property, the Fred Meyer, on the Buffalo Highway 132nd. So Puget Park heads east towards Snohomish, Seattleville Road, that direction. It would have some similarities, higher traffic volumes, got some setback issues. So that pricing is interesting for us to note. And then on number four, which is going to be, I should pay a little bit more attention to how she set this up, but we'll get through it. Number four is going to be farther out on 132nd. That is another development site, priced at $17.39 per square foot. Again, in terms of size and scope and scale, some of these will have less improvement than our piece, but they may not have the same burden that some of our parcels do with the mitigation fees that are kind of it's a reimbursement, so there's nothing that we can really do about offsetting them. So that's a piece at 4,200 132nd. Number six is 8224 172nd Street. That piece of property is currently under contract at approximately $12.26 per square foot. So let's find that particular flyer. And if you've got any questions, please do not hesitate to ask. I'll do the best I can to address them. Well, we didn't really do a very good job on this. My apologies, Council. I don't know why we don't have the numbers. That doesn't make a lot of sense. She's got a number on this, and I'm going to blame myself. They're numbered here. They should be numbered on the pages to coincide. So my apologies for not getting that piece of information clear for you. Some of them are, some of them are not. So 17125 Bacalhauer Highway and 17200 Bacalhauer Highway, those are going to be pieces between 405 and Seattle Hill Road. So that's that main corridor between Everett and Canyon Park. Higher traffic volumes, a little denser, the traffic counts will be different than ours, different traffic patterns. And those, so you're seeing those pieces priced at, currently priced at $12.26. The piece at 6621 Multi Road, that is on the market for $15.22. Again, in relation to ours, and this is going to be number 8 on the hit parade. So this is a piece that's been on the market for a very long time. Steve Storage had it listed maybe 15 years. They've been waiting for sewers to come up Highway 9 to that location. He hasn't really changed the pricing structure. This is going to be the northwest corner of Maltby Road and Highway 9. There's a little convenience store on the corner. The Cedar Lumber is just south of there. There's a little residential office on the other corner. So they've just put a price on it and they've held for it. It's an investment that I think is actually a partner. I know they've got numerous offers on it and they've just never decided to take a change in the pricing. As we move out Maltby Road towards, I would say, the Maltby Interchange off of State Route 522, that's parcel number 9. It is under contract at $22 a square foot. Seems high for that particular area on other pricing. My understanding is it's an owner-user. They will be building supposedly for their own account, which sometimes will give you an elevated price because they can get different financing if that's indeed what ends up happening there. Number 12 is out our direction. It is the piece across from the Chevrolet dealership on the, going to be what, southwest corner of town. That piece currently is priced at $8.84. The broker indicates they will raise the price if the zoning is changed. He believes that there's a potential zoning change in work for the service commercial, the general commercial, which will broaden the uses. But that's a piece that would be similar to our pricing. And then Roosevelt, which is where Tractor Supply is going, out by the Jack in the Box, that closes at $7.27. So it closed for $1.8 million. My understanding is Tractor Supply is going to have a 25,000 square foot building in the yard. And then the Walmart out parcel, the smaller one, out front where Carl's Jr. is going to go, was on the market and is supposedly under contract at $15.13. So this just kind of, gives you an example of some of the other pieces. Again, it's not exclusive, but I tried to find pieces where the zoning was similar, maybe traffic patterns, there were other anchors in the market, so you could see in comparison to ours how we're kind of stacking up. Ours currently are still kind of on the market. I threw it unpriced. You'll recognize, our current deal for a portion of Parcel 5. And I don't know, Jean, if this is the appropriate forum to have a conversation about where that is. And I'm happy to have a conversation with council if you would like. Otherwise, you can do that at another time. Okay. But relative to those properties, I think we're fairly priced because of the mitigation situation, which as we start, hopefully you'll recall, I know you get busy remembering lots of other things, but those mitigation fees actually establish a base of about $9 per square foot, even though we're not really getting any value for the land, because those are all costs that need to come, you know, back to the city that they've been paid, they were paid in advance and they need to be recouped. But those are just at the cost of anybody that's going to buy it. So that establishes our baseline, and then the land price goes on top of that. So that's kind of it. It just hasn't been out to say hello in a while, see if there are any current questions. And I'm happy to answer any questions, concerns, thoughts you might have currently.
Thank you. Councilmember Darren.
Thanks, and thanks for being here. This is very informative to see what everything else is out there.
We should have numbered the pages.
There are numbers on. We used number 12. It's easy to find those. And the ones that I don't see more, or, you know, the North Coast ones, that are just what we're talking about. What are the chances? I know it's not. I don't know that it's one that you're doing, but the Carl's Jr. is the small part. Lot 3, but the lot 2 on the other side of the
They've lot. Actually taken it off the market.
The big chunk, I was going to, that just
the one
seem,
to the north, kind yeah, of into the kind
exactly.
of the incline of the hill, they've taken it off the market.
Okay.
And I think that's because there's a wetland component to it.
I'm sure there is.
I don't think that they've quite figured out how to either work around it or work with it.
Not full of water.
Yeah.
And then, do you have a gut on, I know, again, somebody else doing it, but the ugly east side masonry property at the very next to where the Jack in the Box is, big ugly white brick building.
You know, we pulled that, and I don't know if it's in my stack of papers or not. It, I believe, is on the market for like about $8 a square foot.
Oh, okay, I didn't do the math. It says 3.2 and it's 6.1.
I don't think I included you. Did I mention
that? Yeah, it's in here.
Yeah. No, I don't think it is. It's not number 12. Number 14 is sales factor 5. And we didn't put number 13 in here because we talked about it before.
We've got the number 13.
Objection.
That's the one I'm talking about.
Okay, so have a.
3.2.
There's just so many of them.
I know. Don't worry. I just wanted your gut on that.
My gut on that is until they kind of figure out. You know, the crossing of the railroad tracks and kind of getting the material off that's there.
Right.
I think that's probably as much as anything is until that owner probably spends money to just kind of clean it up. It's hard sometimes for people to imagine beyond that. I don't know if there's an environmental issue with the property, whether they've done phase one or phase two. That would probably have something to do with it as well. And its pricing should be similar to Roosevelt. It should be similar to ours in terms of zoning.
I appreciate it.
Are there any other questions or comments from Councilmembers, if there's something to add in executive session to discuss pricing of property, we can do that after the consent agenda. If that works for your schedule.
Sure.
All right, sounds good. So if there is no objection, we'll add that just after consent.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
All right, thank you. The next item that I have is the presentation we just added. Earlier today I met with representatives from Congresswoman Del Dene's office. She asked that her staff deliver to us a flag of, sorry, I'm not breaking anything, a flag that was flown over the United States Capitol on December 2nd of 2013. I know this is a couple of years ago, and apparently this has been in their office and waiting to be delivered here. So what the certificate says is, at the request of the Honorable Susan Del Dene, Member of Congress, this flag was flown for the city of Monroe in honor of its centennial on December 20th, 2002. So, council members, if you will, come up here. Since Congresswoman Del Bene wasn't here to receive this, we're going to give a thank you back to Congresswoman Del Bene. Thank you, Brad. So I do appreciate the gesture and honoring our city in this fashion, and we will find a good place to put this probably out in the lobby or in chambers here. Okay, the next item that we have on this evening's agenda is comments from citizens. This is the time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. Public comment is limited to 5 minutes per speaker, and we have one person who signed up to speak, Stephanie Box. Ms. Box. Okay. If it's okay with council, is there anybody else who would like to come forward and speak this evening? Okay. Acknowledging that she may have just stepped out for a minute, without objection from council, we'll go ahead and move comments from citizens to follow the consent agenda. Let's move to the consent agenda. Councilmember Gearing.
I move to approve the consent agenda.
Say.
Yeah, the first from Councilmember Gearing.
I guess I should say that slower.
I have a first from Councilmember Gary, a second from Councilmember Gamble. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Okay, so going back to comments from citizens, this is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. Public comment is limited to 5 minutes per speaker. We have one person who signed up to speak this evening. That person is Ms. Stephanie Box. Ms. Box, will you come forward and state your name and address for the record? Thank you.
My name is Stephanie Box. My address is 18606 North High Rock Road, Monroe, Washington. I have had that address since 1992, but I've lived there since 1998. And my concern, and believe me, you guys are so much way ahead of me, so thank you for your time. I used to be a very hardworking person. I lived in East Goat for 45 years, and I saw one homeless person in 45 years. When I go to Seattle, I see him, but otherwise it was one. And a man from Somerset used to take him up for 3 or 4 days, that's a pretty classy neighborhood, and help him out and bring him back down. He was a broken man. Lost his job and lost his wife, and he just didn't care anymore. Anyway, I'm concerned about an article I read in the Tribune about banning panhandling in this area. And like I said, I've been here since 1998. I have not found any of them threatening to me. I've associated with them. None of them are my boyfriends. I don't do drugs. I have communicated with them. They know I'm in love with my first husband. I've heard their hard luck stories. One came from a family of several, I think, 8 children. For 40 years, his parents paid taxes and would be the neighbors. His brothers are very contributing taxpayers. He's broken down. Brother hanged himself at 13, and was with someone 12 years, and that fell apart. And he has a hip with a metal rod and a pain in his leg, in his hip. I've seen his x-rays. Like I said, he's just a friend, or just a friendly acquaintance. And he has he's all crippled up. So people, that lazy bum, why doesn't he go to work? Well, he's got a broken back and really bad hip. And there's another one I know that has bad shoulders and needs shoulder surgery. Another one I know was divorced and he's passed away. He lost his will. I've never been afraid of them. In fact, on the way here, I had one man with his wife and a baby in a carriage, and another one said, I'm going to Fulton, and I can't get my car on the bus to get home. Do you have any spare money to help me with the bus, if you have a pass? I could have been all offended. I wasn't afraid. I said, there's my wife and kids. We have poverty in this area. And I saw that all the shopping centers full, even with men holding signs, peacefully, non-aggressive, people still shop. The problem in this area is the economy. there aren't jobs. Maybe the people in here don't feel it. But there isn't the working class jobs there used to be, and some of these young people coming from the hills don't have connections. And maybe they don't have rich parents to send them to school. But, you know, when they spend 5.1, and I'm not insulting any judgments here, 5.1 on some roundabouts, one I doubt was needed near Goodwill, but anyway, 5.1 million on roundabouts. I don't know how much the space was in the room, but the shops keep changing ownership, changing people leasing, because it's the economy. And I would love to see, maybe I've come across, I can hold it, I'll forgive me, because I know I'm not. I'm over 60, I finally know I don't know everything. But, you know, if some of this money could be used more creatively, maybe to have a cardboard factory, have some kind of work, or direct these children in a different way. I know some of the young kids are rebelling against their parents and they're on the street, probably doing drugs and drinking and this shit. But some of these older people that just told fine, I really want to bid with you and plead with you. Please don't ban me. Those guys take that money, they go to Taco Bell or Jack and Fox, they eat. They might buy dog food, they buy clean socks, they buy batteries for their flashlights. They don't have any place to go. And my other bid to your heart is, and maybe help out Next Step, maybe an annex with showers and lockers, a phone number, or maybe open a labor rate for some of these people that could do 4 hours of work. Help people move. We need to not be so aloof. There is a problem. Some of these people grow up in the country, they don't have connections, like I said, or don't have the money to go to college. This one particular person was a certified diesel mechanic. And I'm not saying they're not without drugs or alcohol. What comes first, the hopelessness or the alcohol? And sometimes they make the first comes first. Hopelessness are not socially accepted in high school, but they're smart people. They just haven't found their niche. Anyway, that's my bid to you. And my other comment was, Mayor McMahon, they were going to arrest every panhandler in Seattle, charge him $100 fine, and put him in jail. And Mayor McMahon, God bless him, said, no way. We are a social city. We care about people. We don't want to give this image that we're too good or they're eyesores. They're hurting us. These are people. These are human beings whose parents probably paid taxes all their life. And they're lost. We shouldn't be so aloof. If we're that aloof, then forget all the material things to buy in any of the stores. And anyway, Americans did this, and they allow panhandling in Seattle, just as long as they're not grabbing people on the arm or beating them in their face. I'd rather copy Seattle than Arlington. Arlington is as well-educated. Probably half the people are afraid they might be there someday, so they just want to get rid of them. Anyway, that's my bid for you. And another comment that I have to make, and I'll get off. Thanks for listening to me.
And Ms. Buck said you need to ask for that.
Okay, my other thing was about camping. Could they ever clear up a certain part of huge Alabama Park for camping? Yeah, designated camping with numbered stalls and put a dumpster and a sand can. I had some up at my house for 3 winters, and I put a sand can up. It cost them $100 a month. They lived in a trailer, helped them through 3 cold winters. Is there any way we could put a sand can and a dumpster and have designated party where they go to the police department and they say, I'm staying down there, and anybody staying there down there is illegal. But if they go to the police department, give them their ID and say, I'm camping down at Alabama Park, and have a designated camping area. Something, or a homeless shelter for the men. Something where they could shower. Anyway, that's all. Possibly a liberty. And thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
To correct what you understood in the article, the city is not proposing to ban panhandling. We are doing an educational campaign about the difference between panhandling and aggressive panhandling.
Oh, okay.
Aggressive panhandling is prohibited citywide.
I just know some of these guys, and you know, they get to eat with it, and they are crippled. I know so many of them that are really, really hurting.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there any other member of the public that would like to come forward to speak this evening? Okay, seeing none, we do have a need for an executive session, and since there are more of you than us tonight, we're going to go ahead and go into another room. We'll be in an executive session for approximately 5 minutes. will be an executive session for pricing of property, first under RCW 42.30.110, subsection 1, subsection B. And thank you all. All right, we're back in session. Thank you, everybody. The next item that we have on our agenda is under unfinished business. Unfinished business item number one, it's AB 15-132, 2015 comprehensive plan update. Mr. Osaki.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, again, a brief update. And I actually apologize because sometimes I feel like I'm not doing my job by giving these brief updates. But we're focusing right now on the Planning Commission and the Planning Commission work. And last night, the Planning Commission actually completed its work in terms of reviewing the economic development element, which was the last of 10 chapters that the Planning Commission has gone through. And actually, to give some credit to the Planning Commission, I was looking at the agenda bill from May to last night, the Planning Commission has been all times, which is a considerable amount of work and effort that's gone into the comprehensive plan. And I really want to say I appreciate their work. So all of the chapters now are with the consultant. The consultant is incorporating all the changes with the hope that we will get some type of draft document back from the consultant for the Planning Commission's August 10th if all goes well. You as the City Council, I know it's been kind of given to you in piecemeal portions, but you do have the goals and policies that the Planning Commission has worked through, and you also have all the action items that have provided to you at previous council meetings. And once I get a complete package of that chapter, I want to make sure I get it to you. Once the Planning Commission begins to do some more work in August, the goal is to begin to draft some findings to support their recommendation. And actually in August, I think we're going to start talking to you and the City Council a little bit more on substantive items again. I want to spend some time on the transportation element because the Planning Commission spent about 3 hours on that. That was a key issue to them. Downtown was a key issue to them also. And then the plan also, we talked last night to the Planning Commission, is to have Chair Christensen and maybe another Planning Commissioner come to one of your August meetings later in the month to kind of talk about some of the key issues that they had as part of this process as well. And so, kind of jumping ahead, but I don't need you to take action now. Later on in the agenda, there was a resolution that actually would set a new target date for completing the comprehensive plan process of September 29th, 2015. So, when that comes on the agenda, we appreciate your support of that particular resolution. So, that concludes my presentation tonight. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions or comments, council members? Thank you very much, Mr. Asad. Thank you. Please extend we're very grateful and thankful to the Planning Commission for all the work that they've been doing. Councilmember Guerin.
Thanks, yeah, I just wanted to say that as well. It's an amazing job by them. I didn't get to make it last night, but I've been able to come sit in a number of times, and the amount of work that they're doing is unbelievable. So thankful for it. One, we don't have to. But secondly, it's such a great job in depth, so much thought, and so much taking the feedback that we've given. So much work has gone into it. That you, of course, have been doing as well.
Thank you. All right, we'll go ahead and move on to the next agenda item. The next agenda item is unfinished business number two. This is AB 15-133, discussion garbage contract schedule. Ms. Nelson.
This particular item is a tentative schedule for the next garbage contract, or how you want to run the garbage, whether it's a utility or a franchise. The tentative schedule is for the months of August and September to do a customer service survey. We're thinking of maybe hiring a consulting firm to do it, and we do have some money in the solid waste fund to cover the costs. And because if we just do a monkey survey or just send out flyers, people that are happy with the service are not inclined to respond. It's something we'll just get to hear from the people who have a beef, and we want to get a fair sampling of what the customers out there truly feel about the services they're receiving and what they would like changed or not changed. And then the months of October, November, and December would be a time for council to have discussion on how they see solid waste service, whether they want to have it as a franchise or a utility, mandatory or not mandatory. There's a lot of options, and how they feel about the current contract, whether they want to extend the current contract, go out for the full-blown RFP process. There's a lot of the things to consider. And once we have the survey, that'll give us some good information. And then also, the staff can provide you with background information on the pros and cons of the different options. And hopefully by the end of the year, we will get some firm direction from council of where you want to go with solid waste and how you want it to be. And then that would give us the year 2016 to do whatever it is council directs staff to do regarding the solid waste services process. And so that's the tentative schedule. I just want to warn you, the months of October through December, you would be discussing this, but also those are our budget months too. So, and plus, at the end of the year, the agendas tend to get pretty heavy. So I just want to warn you, it's going to be a lot of work, but I hope you're up for it. And hopefully, if we present the information clear and concise enough, that, you know, I'm not going to bombard you with, you know, a lot of reading. We'll summarize everything. It's clear as possible. So I'm hoping you'll... I'll get consensus to this tentative schedule, unless you would like to change it in any way.
So council members, will go with the schedule unless we hear otherwise. Is there any opposition to the schedule? All right, so we'll see consensus to proceed with the schedule. Thank you very much, Ms. Miller.
Terrific, thank you.
The next item we have on this evening's agenda is unfinished business number 3. This is AB 15134, GMHB compliance extension request regarding East Monroe. Mr. Asaki.
Mayor, members of the council, this agenda item is for you tonight at the request of Councilmember Gehring and Camp from last week. It would authorize the city attorney to request an extension of up to 6 months to the Growth Management Hearing Board to meet the compliance deadline that was set for the East Monroe Comprehensive Plan Amendment and Rezone. The work on the draft supplemental EIS continues at this point in time. There's been a lot of technical analysis, but quite honestly, some of the permit activities, some of the staffing levels, and the requirement for the GMA update, the ability to complete the draft EIS, the draft supplemental EIS in a timely manner, just hasn't been able to occur. So the request is for the City Council to authorize and direct the City Attorney to request an extension to the Growth Management Hearing Board for a period of up to 6 months.
Thank you. Councilmember Gehring.
Thanks. And I appreciate the update and the sort of that we can discuss this evening. The 21st is the day when, as of right now, they're expecting response guidance.
August 21st.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's the next time there's a 21st is next month, right? And what's the, if we were to not, if we were to not do that, that just means that we essentially you just wouldn't have enough time between now and then. What's left to do for, and is it really 6 months worth of time? I'm pretty sure there's like still a public comment period.
Right, so it's up to 6 months. So what actually needs to happen is that the draft EIS, draft supplemental EIS, needs to be released. There's a comment period for that, typically 30 days. We receive public comment during that 30-day period. We have a public hearing, take oral testimony, take written testimony. At the end of the 30-day period, we take those comments, and this is basically state law. We have an obligation, or anybody that does an EIS has an obligation to do respond to the oral and written comments in writing and produce a final EIS. And once the final EIS is done, then that sets into motion the hearing process. So there's still a comprehensive plan amendment there and the rezone request out there, and those require a public hearing for the Planning Commission and a recommendation to the City Council. You as the City Council would need to take action on the rezone and the comprehensive plan amendment as well, and that will complete the process, and then we report to the Growth Management Hearing Board in terms of our compliance with completing the process.
And yeah, and with, I understand, with the amount of work that we need to go in, the comprehensive plan would be, obviously it's extremely important, there's a very specific deadline. While there is one here, I understand that this, that the comprehensive plan takes, has taken precedence. And we're already up against time deadline, and see it. I guess our next meeting is August 11th. If we were to take action on this tonight, assuming that actually there was a motion and action went through, is there any difference between doing it tonight and doing it on August 11th? Which I've been there only 10 days before. I mean, it's going to be last minute anyway, I guess that's my point. We're already within like 3 weeks of our date when we're asking this.
Well, my sense is that the city attorney would like to get out in front of this as early as possible. So if there's a desire on the part of the council to request an extension, now would be preferable to August 11th.
And we only have 4 people here tonight from that standpoint. Okay, but I'll leave it up to other people who might have comments.
Are there any other comments or questions?
Okay. I see none. We'll have you mic. So
oh, I'm sorry. Councilmember Gamble.
Well, I mean, Councilmember Gearing is a good point for us. There's 4 here tonight. And if we're looking for a motion, you're looking for a motion of approval tonight, is that what we're looking for?
Yes.
And there's a very high likelihood that it could be hung or go in a different way and we're right back at it. So, yes, what I'm asking is, would it make sense to push it to the actually have one or have a complete council?
It's like that.
So, because we've been down this road before. Because mm-hmm. That's why I'm bringing it up.
Or at least one.
Councilmember Heron?
Thanks. Then I will move to table this until the August 11th meeting.
Sorry. In order to table it, does there need to be a motion and a vote to table?
I believe that the intention is to postpone to a time certain of August 11th. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And then that would be appropriate. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So the motion is to
The motion is to postpone this agenda item until August 11th.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any second for that?
Yes.
Okay. I have a motion and a second to postpone this to the August 11th meeting. Any discussion on the motion? Councilmember Gamble?
We're just looking to. Is anybody absent at the August 11th? Jeff's absent.
Jeff is absent. So, Councilmember Rasmussen is absent.
Why am I laying it out? You'd probably rather vote on it right now.
Thank you. There was one option. I know that it's common courtesy to cancel the meeting on the 3rd for the night out against crime.
Yes, at this time that the meeting has not officially been noticed as canceled. However, you did take action on a motion to cancel that meeting. So you could certainly reinstate that meeting or possibly determine another date.
But I don't know what the attendance is like. Those people. I would be available, but I'm not sure why that would be so. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Campbell?
Finally, there's a motion on the floor and a second as of right now. But based on the timeline and everything we have out, I'm going to go to the opposition and I'll take action tonight. That's it.
Okay. Any other discussion on the motion to postpone? Okay. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
Aye.
Your vote, sir?
I was for postponing.
For postponing. Okay, so we have a 3-1 vote for postponing. So this will be held on August 11th. Under unfinished business, I suppose. I assume. All right, thank you. The next item we have on this evening's agenda. Mm-hmm. It is new business item number one. This is AB 15-135, confirm lodging tax advisory committee, LFAT appointments. Is this Mr. Bowler?
Yes, it is.
Mr. Bowler.
Thank you. Annually, the city council is required to review the lodging tax advisory committee membership. We have checked with all the currently serving members whose term expired on June 30th that they are still willing to serve for an additional term, and would recommend that you confirm their appointments for the term of July 1st to June 30th. July 1st, 2015, June 30th, 2016.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
I'll make a motion to appoint Jeffrey Thomas, Mayor, City of Mineral, Doug Hobbs, High Road Promotions, Kelsey Hendricks, Manager of Best Western, Goshen, General Manager, Guest House Inn Suites, and Una, Executive Director of the Mineral Chamber of Commerce, to the Lodging Tax Advisory Committee for the term of July 1st, 2015 to June 30th, 2016.
Second. We have a first from Councilmember Gamble, a second from Councilmember Camp. Any discussion on the motion? Saying none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 4-0. Thank you. Next item we have on the agenda this evening is under new business number two, AB 15-136, discussion utility rate study results.
Thank you.
Thank you.
As we mentioned earlier when we were going over the comprehensive plan, that we are proposing that based on the amount of work that needs to be done in our utility system, we need to have a 7.5% rate increase for the water system and a 4% rate increase for the stormwater system and no rate increase for the sanitary sewer system. You've also had people before you that have requested that we reconsider how we bill people based on, especially from the owner of the senior apartments over on Village Way, about how they are charged for their water rates and sewer rates. And so we, as part of that process, we had FCS Group look at the rate structure, and Mr. Gordon Wilson will be presenting to you a report on what they came up with. And I wish we would go with Mr. Wilson. And how do you want to handle questions, Mr. Mayor?
Why don't we go ahead and if somebody pops in on a light, if it's a clarifying question, just go ahead and pop in. Actually, it's a long presentation, so just pop in, and what we'll do is just check with me after each slide, please. I'll interrupt you.
I do not.
For the record, my name is Gordon Wilson, with FCS Group, and I'm the utility rates, water, sewer, and stormwater services. The comprehensive plan included a forecast for each of those utilities. And the financial forecast, all it did was tell us what the overall level of rate increase for each of them would need to be. It did not actually contain rate schedules. And so tonight, one of the things that I want to do is talk through the actual rates themselves, along with the system development charges. The overall rate increases for water would be about, on average, 7.5% per year. Sewer does not need any increases during the next 6 years. For stormwater, it's 4% per year. So I will first focus on utility rates and then the system development charges. Utility rates, most of the discussion, the presentation will be about some suggested rate design changes for the water and the sewer rates. For the SDCs, the current, just for your information, the current city code uses some different terminology: water capital improvement charge, wastewater capacity expansion charge. The suggestion of the staff and discussing it using a more generic term, which is system development charge or SDC. that's the term I'm using here. The current rate structure for the water utility is a fixed charge per unit that includes a usage allowance of 4 CCS, or 4 MCF. And then there's a volume charge for usage above 4 CCS. The unit is defined as one business, one single home, or each dwelling in a multi-unit structure. Outside city customers are charged 1.5 times in set city rates, and then the fixed charge increases with the meter size. As you can see in that schedule, that shows the current water rate scale. So the larger the meter, the more water can go into that property, the more capacity is demanded from the system, the more cost, the higher the fixed charge. The primary issue with the current water rate design is the double count and fixed charges from multi-unit customers. By way of background, the single-family customers are relatively similar to each other. But with multi-unit and business accounts, there's a huge variation in the amount of water they want to demand. And so the question always arises, how do you scale up the fixed charge for a non-residential or multi-unit customer? Well, for a non-residential, that can be done by establishing multiples based on meter size. So if the smallest meter size, 5/8 to 3/4, the smallest plant in this system. If that becomes the basic unit, then everything else goes to scale up. Because meter size constrains the amount of water that could potentially be demanded by that property. For a multi-family building, there are traditionally two possible ways of doing it. One is you do a per dwelling unit and establish the equivalence between the average dwelling unit and a single family home. Or you can do it through the meter models, the same way that you do for businesses. The problem with your current rate design is that you do both for multi-family properties. So for multi-family customers, the current rate design takes the basic charge from the smallest meter and then it multiplies it by the meter multiple, and then it multiplies it again by the number of dwelling units. So that's where the double count comes in. Now, so that creates such that the government customers are subsidizing single family. We recommend, our suggestion is that the method for the multi-unit be the same as now used for the commercial. We scale up with the meter size, which is possible. We're not only multiplying by the number of dwelling units, but we do the same fixed charge per account. But the problem is easier to identify this fixed because Monroe has a lot of multi-unit accounts, so the cross-subsidy has been substantial. And eliminating inequity means that for some people pay less, other people have to pay more. And that includes significant customers. And the general rule of human nature, not just in the world, but everywhere, is people who are on the upside of inequity aren't aware of that fact. Nobody ever feels like they're getting a good deal. So if you adjust something to make it more equitable, people who are seeing higher increases, they don't see it as fixing the rate increase on top of a 7.5% average. So that's the basic dilemma. So the question we dealt with during the study is, how can you soften it somehow for the single-family customers and still preserve the equity of the system? Well, the approach that we suggested is to make an adjustment to the percentage of the revenue that's generated by the fixed versus the volume charges. And by increasing the volume charge and keeping the fixed charge at the same time, then those larger customers who use more water will pay more. And that includes a large well as the larger departments. And the smaller businesses, single customers, you pay, we usually go to the less ones with payroll and tax. You can't shift too much onto the volume charge without creating a revenue stability problem. So, but you can adjust it a little bit and have softer the way you act to do it with single family customers. So we created, and I explained this in detail in the memo that was in the packets. We created three different scenarios just to kind of explore the bookends. The current water rates generate about 16% of revenue from the fixed charge. And that's very good for revenue stability. Our normal minimum that we recommend is 40% from the fixed charge. But more is better standpoint of having a stable source of revenue. But currently we're at 60%, which is good. But in order to preserve that and still fix the one-way double count issue, we would end up increasing, it would be a 31% increase in the smallest meter size fixed charge. That's a pretty steep hit. So we thought, all right, what if we shift it all the way down to 40% for the fixed charge and 60% for the volume charge? What would that do? Well, that would mean an 84% increase in volume. And take the volume rate over 5 watt. That just seemed kind of stratospheric to us. So we're looking for a middle option. So then we said, okay, what happens if we go ahead and increase the fixed charge by 7.5%? That's our average after. System-wide, we're kind of increasing by 6.7%. But then the additional revenue that's needed in order to solve the inequity with the multiple customers, let's take that all from the volume charge. And that's the third option on the right. And it ends up being about 55.6% from the fixed charge, which is just fine for the sake of water stability. It ends up being a one-time increase to the average single-family customer of about 15%, which is for sure no fun, but it's not 31%. And that's one time. After that, it would be 7.5% in the future. And I just felt like that balances the future goals. Our efforts here would kind of be with each other. This shows the percentage impact in certain bands. The green line, the long green line is we believe it has no increase or a slight increase. No, I'm sorry, a slight.
0.5.
Small, yeah, slight decrease. Or no. So the multi unit is mostly below that green line, because they're mostly saving money. The single family is mostly above that. You've got a whole bunch of people who are only increasing a little bit, up to 5%. But you've got quite a few people that are between 5 and 10%, and between 10 and 15%. So we have fewer than that. So there is an impact to the, and this is based on actual customer statistics, based on their actual usage. The biggest impact is in the non-residential. Once again, the small businesses are just fine. They're just like single family. They have 3 or 4-inch meters and use about as much as a single family. But the larger businesses would pay more because they use more money. The leading party is the volume charge, and that's the charge. But not as much as under the 40%. I didn't even show you that. That extreme scenario, it would really clobber them for larger customers. But this is still pretty noticeable. By the way, you'll see that again in the top of the series, that type of chart. So this is our recommended water rate schedule. It's that middle option that tries to balance these two competing objectives. This is where you are in relation to other utilities in the area. we're pretty much in the water rates of this particular survey group, and we'll continue to move along. For a single family, customer using 7 CCS per month, which is your average. So the rate would go up, but it's still going to be, which is about $39 for something.
Ms. Wilson?
Okay, that's the end of the water section. So if you have questions about water, that's a good time.
Ms. Wilson, Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. Is there a reason why Marysville is considerably cheaper than us?
Good question. You'll see a big range here. And so much depends on the age of the system, where they get their water. In your case, your system, you live and die by every. Your water supply comes from that. They raise the rates, your rates go up. And some people, some of these utilities also have a single major supplier, and some don't. Some have wells, some have surface water. A lot depends on the different system
source for them.
As well as the customer characteristics. Some have a lot of industry and commercial base to spread out the costs.
So that reduces the rate.
That would reduce by increasing the denominator, lower the rate for any given costs. And if you have a big commercial base, it tends to break down.
Thank you.
Any other questions about the water?
Thank you.
All right, sewer. Your current rate structure is a single big monthly fixed charge for most folks. There is a usage allowance of 10 CCS, which is a lot of water. And anything above that is a bulk charge. And then absolute customers are charged 1.5 times if they're governmental structures, 2 times if they're commercial structures. They're not governmental. But there aren't really any, right now, any commercial out-of-city customers. But that's on the books. It's a little inconsistency. We'll suggest that you brought it on with the other out-of-city multipliers that the city has. But right now, it's on the books. And you can see the current rate schedule for sewer. Once again, unit refers to multifamily unit units that are dwelling units, not county per account. And in the case of sewer, that's okay. We'll talk about that. Now, in general, your current rate design is a logical, simple approach. It's very recognizable. I see a lot of cities, a lot of towns. It uses the same approach. It emphasizes, it ignores the strength of the sewage and focuses the differences on the amount of sewage discharge into the system. And it's based only on the volume. Unlike water rates, meter size isn't a very good measure of potential demand for services. So instead, we look at a bunch of average meter volumes as a way to approximate sewage. Now, once again, single-family customers are easy because they tend to be about the same in their annual water consumption. But what we do is scale up from the multifamily and commercial customers. Well, in this case, this particular approach, the multi customers have a flat fixed charge that can be applied to based on the dwellings. But that the amount of that discharge should be scaled to reflect the average usage of park dwellers in relation to the average usage of single family. Because there is a difference. Study the word. But in general, you can use the per unit approach as long as you decide how many equivalent residential units, how many you'll use. It's represented by one partner. For commercial, the approach here, and I see this a lot, is to have the flat charge, this $94 big monthly charge, fixed charge, applied to the commercial customers as well. But then they get an allowance that should be scaled to represent one ERU's worth of consumption. So it's like they're paying for one ERU, they're paying one ERU, everything above that they pay all the charge. So they scale up with their excess usage. And that can work also. And so we're recommending you stick with the same basic approach, but there are some adjustments that you need to bring the different customer classes in proportion to each other. One is that you only need volume rates for your non-residential customers. You don't need them for single family. Your current customer base, very rarely does anybody get a single family customer get Andy's or whatever user or 10 CCFs. But occasionally it happens. And because the charge for single families and for apartments is based on the customer class average as a whole, those people who use more than 10 CCFs are always included in the average. So they should be paying more than, they shouldn't be paying the volume charge, even if they use a lot of water. It's all blending together for single family and for multifamily. The usage allowance needs to be brought in in order to equal one ERU consumption. Right now, 10 CCFs, there was a time, maybe in the past, long ago, that 10 CCFs is what people average, but water conservation has been around for a couple of decades now. And right now, the average is closer to 5 CCFs. It's a winter average for single family residents. All those low flow toilets and high efficiency washing machines, they really do work. People everywhere across the country are using lots of water. So right now there's commercial plants are only starting to be built in the morning after they hit 10 CCFs, but they should start to build after they hit 5 CCFs. There's a mismatch there, and that's essentially the end. But at the same time, that fixing that is like a $40.70 increase for any of those businesses that use these 10 CCFs a month. That's the difference. 5 and 10 CCFs at the volume rate, which is about $8 or so, then they're $40. And so we suggest that be raised for the transfers. If you have bad news, it's going to phase it in. And this is not being driven by the need for system revenues. It's being driven by equity. Just to be fair, and it's okay to take a good time to get it right. And slow down the payments for that. The third change we suggest is that we set the multi-unit charge for dwellings in proportion to their average usage. I see utilities that are typically between about 60% and 80% of the average single family for apartment dwellers. Once in a while, I see apartments at about 35, but usually it's 60 to 80. In the most case, it happens to be just about exactly 70% of the average winter. But the winter average for apartment owners is in relation to the single family. So that is the single family people should still be charged the money for something, but the apartment dwellers should be charged a fixed monthly amount that should be about $66, which is 70% of that in proportion to the amount as a class that they lose during the winter. So in relation to their indoor water consumption, that's the stuff that goes down the sewer. And by the way, we use winter average so you don't get irrigation mixed into the meter data. And then the last suggestion is that you just equalize the outside city multiplier. And since 1.5 is what you use for water, what you use for some of your sewer counts, the only real sewer counts you have right now. And it's also a very common multiplier in other utilities. 2.0 is pretty steep, but it's pretty rare. I just suggest that you standardize it. And it wouldn't affect revenues because it's like how many actual customers. Now, the sewer forecast doesn't have any actual rate increases in the rates over the next 6 years. So you don't need money. You've got a positive forecast surplus and cash flow. Now, increasing the, reducing usage amounts for those commercial customers would increase the charges for about a little more than half of those commercial customers. But the other revenue changes would reduce your revenue. So we had to at least check, we have enough revenue to forecast, is this going to cause a problem with the revenue stream? The answer is no, it doesn't cause a problem. And we've got it starting out, starting 2016, we've got 619,000 of headroom in the forecast, and after you make those various adjustments, you're about 550,000 of positive cash flow. We're still okay. Probably still use the early retirement bonds a few years from now. The current sewer rate is very strong for the purposes of generating revenue. So it doesn't move in after those other adjustments without messing up your financial pattern. This shows that the non-residential, the percentage increases, remember it's all $40.70. People who use between 5 and 10 CCS are less than that, but if they're using 10 CCS for more than one, it's a flat $40.70 that they pay in addition. But for someone who's exactly at 10 CCS, $40.70 is a big percentage increase over what they're now paying. And you can see that in the bars in the bottom right corner. So those folks are paying 30% increase as a percentage. And so that's the reason they did it. The single family people, no change. The multifamily people, everybody would save 30% just by adjusting that. The definition of people would say they would pay 0.75%. So this is our recommended sewer rate schedule. In addition to things that we already talked about, creating a little more careful definition of the to cover mixed-use buildings, explicit about commercial buildings that have their own tank space that are set to the meter, things like that. The key is, where there's a meter, that's a meter. Because the thing that's where you pay the fixed charge based on who has a meter, and then the usage after that all goes on to the volume charge. That's what makes it up. There's current sewer rates are at the top of the list. So we've gone through several years of struggling, really tough rate increases, but we're there. This is enough to fund your capital program that came out of the recent comp plan. The only way is to come up for the forecast rate in the next six years. And gradually, the other utilities will catch up. The stormwater, we didn't see any problems with the rate design. It's based on current equivalent residential unit, which is defined as 25 million square feet of impervious surface area. Very simple method. It works in exactly one. So this rate schedule just shows the annual 4% increases that are being called for the comprehensive. And your stormwater rates are a little below the average also. Now the combined customer impact, all three utilities. In order to look at this, we invented to sample customers using average usage for a single family and one unit. For the small commercial, we used average water usage. For the large commercial, we set at the 75th percentile water usage. We just made some assumptions just to define these hypothetical customers. And we said, okay, how much are they increasing? Well, the far right box shows how much they're increasing overall. And the answer is a single family and a small commercial have gone up by about 4% per year, all three utilities. Remember, the biggest charge is a sewer charge, and that's not going on at all. So the fact that water is pushing up the river by 7.5% of the water doesn't mean the total bill is going up by that much. The total bill is going up by 4% for those single family for the small commercial. The multifamily, as we would expect, are going down by about 30%. The large commercials are going up by 11%. They're the people that are and for the future, whenever you next do a rate study, I suggest there are two rate design issues that should be looked at the next time. One is to evaluate the appropriateness of those regional options, the spread between the smallest meter and all everything else. And for the sewer, it has to be the relationship between the fixed charge per ERU and the volume rate versus the other. So in both of those, there's, depending on the results of the analysis, there's a possibility of a further cost shift toward large commercial customers. And I just thought customers are only making this change all the time. So this way we just focus on the most pressing equity issues. And next time around we can look at those other ones. They're worth a closer review, but they weren't addressed in this particular study. Okay, that's the end of the sewer part and stormwater. Do you have any questions about the sewer, the recommended changes to the sewer?
That's where I'm sharing questions. Okay, I don't see them.
Okay. One more big chunk here. Systems Development Charge, SCCs. This is the big charge payable at the time the property is developed. Or if it's developed more intensely, like it's a remodel. Existing buildings on both sides. In the SDC calculation, the numerator is the cost basis and the denominator is the number of ERUs in which those costs are being spread. And whenever you've got the rate, which is the numerator and denominator, the bigger the cost, the higher the result. The bigger the denominator, then the lower the result. So that's the smaller the denominator, the higher the result. That's the basic. And in the Wells case, just to be consistent with how the SEC is usually administered, we use the meter equivalents as the ERUs for this particular case. And that's partly because it's a long part of the case of sewer. Meter equivalents will be applied as well for sewer, but plenty of utilities, sewer utilities, use them anyway for development charges because it's so hard to guess how much consumption any given building is going to have. So you don't have a winter average for something that hasn't been built yet. So in this case, it follows the meter equivalent, just like the water does. Now, there's more than one reasonable method for calculating SDCs. And I'm going to show two of them to you and show the differences. I'm going to suggest you change from one to the other. Now's a good time to do that. I'll describe the advantages and disadvantages of the change. This method, and by the way, this choice is a policy choice. There's not a legal risk here. You can choose this one or the other one, they're both very commonly used. A lot of it depends on the relative policy preferences. This is your existing approach, called expansion incremental approach. The theory of the resilience, that's the object. It loads all of the expansion related future costs, that is your CIP, your capital program. If it's related to expansion, it's loaded all onto the future ERUs projected. And the key is these future costs are not being divided by the existing customer base. It's only being divided by the new folks. So this component, you take your existing stuff and you divide it by everybody, but you take new stuff and divide it only by the newcomers, you're going to end up with a higher charge. And that's the So this particular method has as a policy, as a way of, a lot of jurisdictions like it, because it shows a growth pace for growth. It gives existing customers preference over new customers, since member facilities are likely to be more costly than others. It's not as concerned about equity, which you can move the numbers and other factors. It's concerned, the major concern is to make sure that existing people get the benefit of their less expensive existing facilities, the numbers pay full freight for the new stuff. That's the basic idea of this program. It has a big disadvantage that people like me are likely to notice, and that is it's unstable from one update to the next. This rate bounces around a lot. Every time we do one of these updates, the number changes, and the question is always, what's different? Well, it's very sensitive to projections about future growth, and it's very sensitive to the size of the expansion capital, which can vary. My goal is, let's say you've got a treatment plant expansion in your capital program, and you go along and get closer and closer, and it's all part of this new, it's born all by newcomers. And then all of a sudden, it goes into the past. Suddenly, it's part of your existing plant. And then it's absorbed by everybody, and the rate goes down. Well, what has changed? It doesn't. So it creates that kind of instability in the rate, which is another type of, it emphasizes, places less emphasis on equity between the people connecting next year and people connecting 10 years from now. We have that, which is. So that's the downside of this particular method. But again, it is a respectable method of having utilities use it. Here's another method, and I'm not going to be recommending it, but again, it's your call. They're looking for as many syllables as you get, called the average entry. It divides everything by everybody. So all the costs, present, future, existing, future, divided by all the customers, existing, future. This approach has an emphasis on equity. I'm trying to gain advantage for the current customers and make sure that the newcomers are paying minimum. It's saying everybody's buying it. It's a buy-in charge that takes into account projected future customers and future costs. And so that's, and therefore it's more stable than its results. And that's the approach that we tend to recommend in general whenever there's an opportunity to change it. Here's the reason I think this might be a good time for Monroe to consider switching methodologies. It's because if we stick with that unstable method, the current method, which is approach A, your STC, we will run from the combined water source to the 11,000 to 14,000 miles, 28% increase. If you switch methods, then it would be a 4% increase, which is the column on the right, the approach B. So, like I said, we tend to favor the average integration method in general, like from my perspective, it just feels more fair. But, always with the caveat that both methods are reasonable. But the fact that the unstable nature of this current method is such that you're pushing up the development costs considerably. Means that I thought I'd at least bring it up. If you're going to change it, this is a good time to do it because the costs and the growth forecasts are such that the calculated rate of this method would be a lot higher. You're right in the middle for your combined water and sewer STCs. Although this is a little interesting because but the highest group, those five that are more than you, Woodville, Boston, Duval, Redmond, Kirkland, four of those five are served by King County wastewater. everybody would do all. So your position in the ranking wouldn't change in approach A or approach B, but if you choose approach A, you're definitely moving toward that higher level. And the developers who are more likely to be attuned to this will surely notice that much of a difference. Okay, that's it. So any questions about the STC?
Councilmembers, are there any questions? Councilmember Campbell?
Just one question. You made reference, so what was the reason for the change on that?
What was the reason for what? I'm sorry?
Change to the system development chart, STCs, as well. Because it was just a standardized one of all the other cities, took away from calling it a capital impact.
Oh, the terminology?
Yeah.
The name of this thing is always been problematic in our industry. Connection charges, general facilities charges, plan investment fees. I can name about a dozen things that this is called. The most common two names are system development charges or general facilities charges. And in discussing it at the staff level, we met with Brad, he said, no, let's simplify this. Give it a call something that is recognizable, let's stick with it. And for sure, that would be the same name for water and sewer. So, but it doesn't really matter. And I did it here, but whether you incorporate that change into the code, that's up to you. But it's a recognizable term. Outsiders, developers who come in and want to build, will easily recognize the term system development charge. You know what that means. And it's not, they'll know that that's not the cost of the solar meter. The reimbursement for the cost of the physical installation is a share of the capital investment. They know it's a capital recovery type of charge. It's not even hundreds of dollars, it's thousands of dollars.
Any other questions? Ms. Wilson, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Mr. Bowler, can you talk to us about next steps on this?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Right now, we are recommending that you adopt this for the become effective for 2016, which, if this is depending on which way you'd like to go, so we need some direction on how you would like to proceed. But you would like to, you know, take the rest of this year after we know what your direction is to rewrite the pertinent code sections to take this into account on how we do the billing and the system development charges. And so we could have that before the council in the end of November for adoption for implementation in the new year. So, you know, either tonight or you know, if you want to wait for more council members to be present, there'd be no problem in putting off to like the 11th to discuss if you want to do option A or option B, or you want to leave the rate structure the way it is now or change to the recommended approach of moving things around a bit.
In terms of timing, then we can do this in August or September. The council can make a determination in August or December. There's a lot of material here.
August should be to decide, because it'll take a while to write the new code, and it has to come, whether you want to have public hearings or not, or just public meeting for more notice to the public, and then, you know, two readings, publication, all that, so it's in place so they can start it the first of the year.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, and appreciate that time frame. Right, this is a separate action that has to be taken from the budget itself, that needs to be incorporated into the budget.
No. Yes and no. The budget...
For planning, we need to know
how much
we're going to get. That's what I mean by incorporating.
Yeah, if we're we told you how much more money we need.
Right.
It's just where it's going to come from is a separate project, or the process. So, we've already recommended that we increase the amount of revenue we get by 7.5% for water and 4% for storm, leaving the same for sewer.
Right.
That's the budget process, and then the other process is who the money comes from, which is the other process of getting things up.
Okay. Very good. So, timing-wise, obviously, both have to be done this year. We need the budget for next year, and we need to this one so we can. New ordinance?
Yes.
Okay, so writing the ordinance, time to make sure that's in effect, mm-hmm. which will be in effect January 1st.
Right.
So all happens this year, but so sometime in the next month. Do we need formal action, or can we just ask for it to be returned to a future agenda?
We'll just go ahead and put it on the extended agenda when we come to that chair.
Very good. All right, sounds great. Yeah.
All right, are there any other questions or comments from council? So I anticipate we'll put this on a future meeting when we discuss the extended agenda in just a couple minutes. All right, the next item on the agenda is final action number one. This is 815-137, resolution number 014. 2015 was our 2015 conference plan update, estimated completion date. Mr. Sauer.
Mayor, members of the council, as mentioned earlier in the agenda, this resolution 14-2015 would basically establish or identify September 29, 2015 as a new target date for the city's adoption of the comprehensive plan. Current target date was actually today, July 28th, but this resolution takes into account the work that the planning has done during the course of the past couple of months. So the staff recommendation is that the city council adopt resolution 14-2015. If you have any answer to your questions.
Thank you. Councilmember Kent.
Thank you. I move to approve resolution number 14-2015, setting forth an updated timeline and schedule for city council review and adoption of the comprehensive plan. Mm-hmm.
I have a first from Councilmember Kim, second from Councilmember Gary. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion passes 4-0. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is Councilmember Reports. Councilmember Gary.
Thanks. I did receive word earlier that Councilmember Davis was going to be here. Apparently, he was lost his hand belt at 4:05. So he's planning to be here, but couldn't make it. So just want to make sure that that's all right, that that's the reason he couldn't make it tonight.
Thanks for the record. I'll show these excuses.
Secondly, Councilmember Horowitz, I can't hear anything off the top of my head anymore.
We've started the shift into the sports season, and changed into football, so the high school summer camp has kicked off. We have another town outing. It's always scores me every year when you kick that thing off. And so like half the towns at the high school watch Pee Wees, the ninth graders, the eighth graders playing the game. So now we'll go to about November, December. So here we go.
Thank you. That's over camp.
That's important.
That's over Rasmussen. Okay, up to staff.
That's over them.
Deputy Chief Kennard.
Nothing other than I hope to see as many of you as possible on August 4th, National Night Out on this one.
Thank you. Mrs. You're almost a council member, Ms. Nelson.
Today I had a phone conference with the bond underwriter and with the bond raters at Standard & Poor's. And we went through the entire financials of the city and the purpose of these bonds that we're issuing this in August and all. And I just wanted to say they wanted copies of all of the policies that you guys have adopted the last few years, the reserve policy, the cost allocation policies, and all those things you've been doing. They were very impressed that we have those in place as formal policies, and they wanted copies of all of them. And I think if we're asking for a reaffirmation of our AA negative rating, we might get a slightly higher rating just because we have all these good policies in place. And, we've demonstrated, you've knocked the debt down from $16 million originally down to $4 million. You've shown that your intent to keep going with, you know, using the proceeds from land sales to pay off the bonds. Because councils remain focused and on target with this whole plan, it's really good.
Mr. Osaki.
I have nothing tonight.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Felder.
Just a couple things. The work still proceeds on downtown. If you notice, they're putting in the paved drain blocks on the south side. And also, they started work on Dirty Place. So I haven't been on the K-Lake side yet to see what's there, but we drove by. The signs are up on Woods Creek Road.
Street. Yeah.
So there's some stakes and things out there. So we'll better start the day.
There's still a hill there.
There will still be a hill there because the road is going to go uphill. So.
We all get a pile of dirt.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, since you got the core samples of the we'll have to bring you
keep
a pile
our
of dirt.
Going. Yeah. Just going to collect dirt from the rocks projects. Yeah.
It'll be a little messier than the concrete, though.
Since it's on the agenda as tentative, any news on the downtown?
No, you gave me a couple samples on Friday when I was at a chat and I looked at them and I didn't like them. So she's working on them again, so hopefully we'll have them for the next meeting.
Okay, so the next meeting will be August
11th. The 11th, yeah.
I'm sorry.
11.
August 11th, thank you. Will we be able to still get those before August?
Yes, because there's supposed to be a 2-week turnaround, so if you like them on the 11th, it'll be the 20, you know, 26th.
Okay.
So.
Cool, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right.
Just Mike's report. Oh, yeah, that's right. Mike's report, yeah. Okay. I'm putting my perks and rec hat on for Councilor McKinney. Well, I'm just curious. Are we still on track for completion downtown by
August? Yes.
Yeah, before the end of August,
yes.
The first week of August.
The first week.
Well, second week.
Second week, that's sorry. That was 10.
Yeah, and
they're
third week
now.
Okay, some of you might have heard about the Sky to Sound Water Trail Concept Plan. The Snohomish County Office of Economic Development and the County Parks Department are seeking technical planning assistance from the National Park Service through their Water Trails and Conservation Program to help create the plan. And they reached out to mayors along the route and asked for a support letter that's been drafted, and the mayor will be submitting that out in the next day or so. So I wanted to let you know if that's happening. And then in regards to skate park improvements, we received a grant award, which is exciting. We received this notification last week that we received $120,000 from the State Recreation Conservation Office for construction of the skate park improvements at Lake Tahoe.
Thank you. Councilmember Garrett.
Hey, Gene, just a quick question on the Sky to Sound. We have a lot of people that are in support of Centennial Trail. Tim Hemman has come and talked a number of times. He met with a number of us. They were talking about like $1 million a mile type of thing to do that. I'm assuming that's something that would be part of a plan such as that, based on my limited understanding of what it is, but it's that recreation type of area. And would Centennial Trail not be something that would be included in a plan of that nature?
It's kind of separate because this is water. It's not another river, just water.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. In a very loose way, what this is basically putting in docks and some improvement on docks. But it's basically reinforcing the use of the river, the Skykomish River, through Sultan and Gold Bar down to Monroe for kayaking, canoeing, and rafting.
I see. So access
the short one, basically.
And sustainable, environmentally friendly stuff.
And certainly the future Centennial Trail should in some way intersect that on its way south.
I was thinking this is much larger in scope than that. Okay, got it. Appreciate that clarification.
Before we go on to the extended agenda, then I have worked with staff to put together a piece for the mailer. And so this. It says on the top, the M&O, Panhandling and Solicitation, and I'll just read through it since we've got a couple members of the audience here, but aggressive panhandling and solicitation is not allowed anywhere in Monroe. Aggressive panhandling and solicitation is when someone asks you for something, including money, in a threatening or forceful way, keeps asking you for something after you said no. So there's no way to do not allowed. Or blocks your path to try to get something from you. If you feel that aggressive panhandling has happened, get to a safe place, call 911, and provide a report to the responding officer. Okay, so that takes care of the aggressive panhandling component. Now, private property owners can allow panhandling unless it is aggressive. Again, that's prohibited everywhere. If you have concerns about this on private property, please contact a store employee or property owner. They may call 911 for help. And again, that gets to what was discussed last week about a property owner can say that it's trespass. And then for more information, contact Monroe Police Department, and the contact information is down there. Do council members have any concerns, additions, fractions to this? Councilor Rigan?
I'm just trying to remember from last week. There was one portion, I don't know if it was under aggressive panhandling, but it was there. Basically, a fraud was occurring.
Right, that is in the code. That is in the code, yes. Deputy Chief Bernard, in talking to Chief Quinzer, there was a level of detail where we tried to summarize things for what's going out in the mailer. But that is written in code that if it can be demonstrated that it's a false statement, that that is also considered aggressive panhandling. Is that correct?
That's in the aggressive panhandling.
Yeah. And the only reason why I bring that up is because we had some examples. That would be the only thing that that's not in here.
Correct. Okay. Council members, would you like something to that effect added, the false representation? Council question.
Thanks. Yeah, I think that's good. I just were getting a little busy. I want to make sure people read it. Because I think that's a good point that it needs to be. If I'm opening up my utility bill, I'm going to pull this out. It's where maybe we can squeeze a couple things together, squeeze it in there, it's just getting busy. That's my only concern.
Yeah. Just correct on it.
Yeah.
I'm just basically asking for a tour bill. What is aggressive?
If you squeeze it in, I just worry about it getting too busy.
Okay. Yeah. Can we ask one more question? Deputy Chief, from the perspective of enforcement, is it easy to demonstrate that somebody's making false statements, like saying that they're a vet?
And no, it's next to impossible to prove that element of that particular crime. The blockage of pedestrian or vehicular traffic is an easy one. The aggressive nature, once you've said no, they keep going. But the fraud portion of the aggressive manhandling is extremely difficult to prove. Most of the time, these individuals make claims and very often they're not true. But we do have a very difficult time proving. So I would recommend to the council as an event that we not put a portion of that in, because I think it confuses the issue of folks reading that. What they really need to know is if they're in fear, if they're obstructed in any way, if they said no and the people keep coming out. They need to know that that is aggressive, and they need to know that it's not a crime against society, it's a crime against the individual, so we need them to stay there and make a report, or to come into the police department and make a report, or virtually we can't do anything about it.
Yes, Councilor Gamble.
I guess my question is, why is it in the code then? I mean, that's, the piece, I completely, respect the answer you just gave, and I'm sure it's completely accurate. But it is in the, we do have it in the code, and that was part of the other thing was about misrepresenting. It's the same as folks going around and right now knocking on doors, misrepresenting. So, if we're going to go on an education and a campaign of what the existing code is, because that's what we said we're going to do, I just think that's a piece that should be a part of it, because there's been concern expressed from citizens about, that misrepresentation has happened. Or we could eliminate, or we should talk about taking out. We can't enforce it.
Yeah, if I can address that as well, I believe that was put in codes a while back. If somebody is in a public area representing, say, the Boys and Girls Club, we can prove that one way or the other. And I think that's the nature of why it was put in there, is so that you can't go out and represent a nonprofit organization to solicit money for personal use. As far as the claim that I'm a disabled vet, sometimes very difficult to prove that. So.
But to your point, that would be, should have one Boys and Girls Club sitting right here.
Right, because it covers solicitation and panhandling. So panhandling is a form of solicitation. What you're saying, Deputy Chief, is that
that the somebody's saying that they're collecting for the Girl Scouts to pull away from Boys and Girl Scouts, and they're not really collecting for the Girl Scouts. That's clearly false representation.
Clearly false representation or something.
For solicitation. Okay. All right. So Councilmember Gamble, do you have anything for
that? No. So thank you for the presentation.
Thank you. Councilmember Kemp and Councilmember Henry.
Thank you. I'm just curious. So the solicitation and the panhandling laws are...
Yes.
So it's the same word.
In fact, the panhandling doesn't... actually solicitation.
Well, solicitation.
So it's considered the same thing.
Actually, panhandling isn't mentioned. It's called solicitation.
Oh, so it covers it completely.
Correct. Solicitation is a broader term.
Okay. I just want to make sure it's clear. So the example that you're giving with Boys and Girls Club or what an organization, I mean, I'm just saying that it just seems like a different issue than, like, standing on the side of the road, holding the signs and disabled that, or even that.
I need gas money.
Right.
And you don't really.
Oh.
Right.
And I would refer that to the attorneys, but I believe from talking to the attorneys that I have on this issue, if you want to put something in an ordinance towards that, you've got to have at least a background of why you're going to put that in there. For example, if you wanted to put in something in an aggressive ordinance that would not solicit at a fuel station, you would have to have some reasoning behind that for the ACLU, or you would most likely challenge that.
If that information can be added, I understand the point of Mr. Gamble about adding that information on this card.
For false representation.
Right, but getting back to the point, this is more of a what to do in an emergency type of item, and I'm more concerned with people being approached in an aggressive manner than I am about somebody making false claims about what the folks of their solicitation. So, if you can do that, great. But I'd like to get this as an emergency aspect of it, see if there's a problem with this.
Thank you. Councilmember Gehring and Councilmember Rasmussen.
I appreciate that point as well. What I was seeing here as I'm drawing, I'm getting this and I want to draw the person's attention to one thing, the action we want them to take when they see it. Some sort of an outline or a box around the, if you feel aggressive handling has happened, and the three bullet points following that. And the chief talked about that last week, that's what we want. We don't go on Facebook, don't go on social media. Get some more safe and call 911.
So put a red box.
Here's the action we want you to take. And so highlight that box or something.
Yeah.
That would be my.
Okay. Councilor Rasmussen.
Thank you. And I would really agree with that. I mean, I think the catalyst of all this was the aggressive and threatening aspect of it all. And that's the piece that we're both having to work and trying to focus on each one. Educating the public about. So, the aspect of solicitation and false representation, that's good to know. I didn't realize or have that clarification for how that felt, but it's good to know, and I'm glad it's in there. So, but as far as the this feeling, I like the information that's in there. Just
all right, so again, this is the piece that will go in the utility billing. Our target is to get into the utility billing that's coming up for August. We have it in English, we also have it in Spanish in the back. We then will proceed to work with the Chamber of Commerce and the business community to get the information out there. We may look at doing some of the hard stuff that we can put out in racks and things like that. So that's the direction we're going. The piece that goes in the mailers for the utility building will probably just be on paper. The reason for that is there's a higher cost to put in the card stock and then mail it because of weight. So that's what we're looking at. If we can't make the August billing, then we'll let you know. We'll be in the September billing mail, but the target is through this August. Any questions? All right. Thank you. As for my report, the
this afternoon, I met with representatives from Congresswoman Delvaney's office. Had a very nice conversation with them. I do thank her for having them come out to meet with us. Talked to them about silent train crossings, talked to them about a switch in town, talked to them about an overpass, to another overpass in town because of the train traffic. All of those were linked at reducing the amount of time that somebody waits to cross when a train goes through town. So we've talked about all of those at some point in time. When it's not a train crossing, so the trains can go faster through town. You don't need to slow down as you come through town and things like that. Talked to them about the bypass. We were still supportive of doing a bypass at some point in time, and they were aware of that. Talked to them about some of the other things we've got going on in town where, you know, we're looking for help. One of them being a couple of the properties in the old industrial area downtown, and how we clean up some of those properties that we have in downtown to improve opportunities for revitalization and redevelopment. Talked to them about a little bit about some of the capital requests that we had made out of Olympia, including the synthetic fields out at Lake Tye. Talked to them about SR 522, even though it's not their deal. It's a state route about the hourglass and the two lanes. And then listened to them about different things that they have going on and whatnot. So as I mentioned earlier, it was really nice when they showed up with this flag here. And it was a couple of years late in getting to us, but the new staff there wanted to make certain we actually got it, and that was really nice they brought it. Have anything else really to report? I had a busy Thursday, and I just didn't take any notes to share with you what went on last week. I think that's all that I have. Let's go ahead and go to the extended agenda.
Okay. Draft agenda for August 11, 2015. We'll put Councilmember Davis back in the queue for the Court of the Week. Under announcements and presentations, we have Representative Dan Christopher and American Legion. We have a consent agenda. We've been in business. We have a 2015 conference plan update. And discussion of downtown parking in regards to residential units in the downtown. In new business, we have Planning Commission compensation, and then the P4, which we don't have any items for.
So we had added the East Monroe item to August 1, is that correct?
In Banners.
Excuse me?
In Banners?
Yes, I was going to say
okay.
In Banners.
In utility rates.
In utility rates. All right, is there anything else for August 11th? Let's go ahead and look at the extended agenda. Does anybody have anything else for the extended agenda? Okay, seeing none, we have no other business this evening. Council, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Okay, the first from Councilmember Kemp, second from Councilmember Rasmussen to adjourn. Any discussion on the motion to adjourn? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Passes 4-0. Thank you very much for your service.
There you go.